this is not gonna go the way you think.
Mm-hmm. All right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 289, and I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott from Austin.
Oh, you're in Austin. Yeah, that's right. And I'm I'm Ash from sunny Orlando.
And I'm cool. Sick.
Oh, man.
This is a great podcast.
It's going to be a booger-filled one.
It's not. It's all, like, chest and, like, deep sinus congestion, you know, like not up front, like the one that sits like way in the back that you can't clear. Like none of it goes away. It just sits back there forever. So
that's terrible. When we get to episode 300, we should count how many times we were sick on the podcast. I guarantee it's at least about 25-30 that one of us was coughing up something.
I really do like the idea though of going over all the things that have happened to us since we started doing this
in the
over 300 episodes. Yeah.
It's going to be silly, very silly.
It's a few things. It's a few
just
things.
Just a few, a couple of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
So I'm traveling again, so I'm doing another hotel podcast episode with you guys, which is always fun.
Always good.
Always good, yeah. I'm in Austin, Texas right now for a work conference thing. And I got to tell you, most of the time when I go to conference travel, conferences are usually double booked in a hotel with some other conference, you know? So it'll be like the National Association of Pens or something like this, right?
Yeah, it's the best.
But this particular conference that we're sharing this hotel with, I guess, is for a product called, I want to say it's called like Spiceworks or something like that, because it's some IT product or something. But their conference is called Spice World.
Did you get real excited for a second? You're like, oh boy.
Oh my gosh.
It's making me feel all kinds of interesting feelings, and I don't know how to handle them right now, because I'm initially excited and then instantly disappointed.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is that I wanted to know what this was, and I went to the website for this conference. I read three paragraphs. I still can't tell you what this conference is about.
No, I mean, if it's like a tech conference, you'll never figure it out. It'll be like disrupting innovation in a field like no one's, you know, parallel lines of synchronicity. And you're like, you're not saying anything.
Yeah. And then you're to your point, I was in the elevator with some of the Spice World fans, if you will. And they were talking to each other. And one person was like, how was the conference? And the other person was like, good. And they're like, how did it go for you? Oh, lots of good information. I heard a lot of great things. I learned things at this conference. And I just wanted to shake the person to be like, what is this conference about? Because it sounds like it's about nothing.
You know? It sounds like they're just fake people from the Matrix that are just
they did that thing I hate on TV shows where people are like, did you get that thing? Yeah, I sent it to the place. Okay, well, we're going to go get something for the other thing. And you're like, no one speaks without specifics. What is happening right now?
Not only that, but in two separate elevator rides today with two entirely different groups of people attending Spice World, somebody used the phrase, cool, 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 in the elevator.
What?
It's like, are you coming down to dinner tonight? Yeah. And it's like, all right, cool, cool, cool.
Question,
it's like,
though. Are you just riding the elevator up and down this entire conference?
That's pretty much what I was doing. Because I was doing I had to do a lot of work in the room this time. So anytime I get bored, I would just go down to the lobby and like do a lap, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so I got to overhear a lot of hotel conversation, which I think that's going to be my new favorite thing, is to just like ride the rails and and hear what people talk about in the elevator, because that was really fascinating.
Doing cool, cool, cool now is Andy from Andy Samberg's character on.
Yes. 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 And they're doing it exactly like that.
Yeah.
But it was like two separate people on two different occasions, which I thought was really bizarre. That's the glitch in the Matrix that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because the dialogue options are just repeating now. Like, I've exhausted all the dialogue, and now the NPCs are just saying the same things over and over again.
Did you see that they supposedly, some scientist has proven that we can't be in a computer simulation? Because
how did they?
According to him, computers will never be like big enough to program this universe or whatever. I don't know, something like that.
Computers that we build.
That was the worst explanation ever created. Yeah. But basically, he came up with some simulation that said, like, oh, we'll never have the capacity to do this. Maybe he just knew our timeline is very short.
Maybe. Yeah. Like, that would make sense.
But the aliens may live longer than us, and so they have the time. You know,
so maybe they already did it.
Or maybe they experienced time. They experienced time in a circle, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Arrival. I watched it.
Yeah. Roadhouse. Anyways. Yeah.
You're doing the rundown, man.
Oh, I do. Yep.
I've been waiting for it. I'm like, fucking elevator talk for 20 minutes. What the fuck's going on?
Hello from Austin.
Sorry. Hold on.
Matt's going to die. On this episode of the podcast, we'll talk a little bit more about Life is Strange Before the Storm. Matt and I are playing Cuphead. Ash watched The Gifted and Inhumans, and Matt saw Blade Runner 2049, which I'm excited to hear about. And then we'll get into some news regarding Overwatch and Oculus and Google. And then there's this new movie coming out in December called The Last Jedi. That dropped a new trailer this past week, and that's going to be exciting.
I'm excited.
Yeah. So I think...
Let's get into elevator talk.
Yeah, more elevator talk.
So I was riding up and down the elevator. And these guys.
Cool.
News.
Okay, so this is just a quickie. The new holiday event dropped yesterday for Overwatch, and it is a return to Junkenstein's Revenge, which was the PvE Halloween event last year. So they brought back all the Halloween content from last year and added a bunch of additional stuff. So if you like the PvE content in Overwatch, shooting robots and all sorts of fun stuff, there is a PvE event that runs to the beginning of November. It's pretty fun. You basically just have to hold a point, and then waves and waves of enemies come. You have a handful of different characters you can choose from, all new legendary skins, a couple hundred different new icons and emotes and all sorts of crazy stuff. Blizzard really, really knocks it out of the park when it comes to Halloween content. This stuff is like insane. The quality of the legendary skins is just unbelievable. So if you were taking a break from Overwatch, now's a good time to come back and try and get some of this stuff before it's gone in November. The good news is if you missed stuff last year, they bring it back and then you can buy it for less tokens than it would cost now. So yeah, so you have an opportunity to get the old stuff as well. But yeah, I just wanted to let people know that Junkenstein's Revenge is back.
Crazy.
Yeah, I haven't played in a while. Yeah. I would be totally into that. The PvE stuff, I think, is really where it's at. Hopefully they'll do more of it. Apparently they're working on something new as well.
Yeah, I saw that. I just actually saw that news too. They're hiring for an unannounced project. I mean, they would at this point
Overwatch
they would be
related, they said.
Oh, would it be? I heard that.
Yeah, they said first person Overwatch related.
Interesting.
That's what the internet sleuths have sleuthed out.
I would love for them to do a full PvE campaign, but I also saw that they're hiring for some mobile stuff too. I think Matt, you sent me that. So
yeah,
looks like they have a lot going on. I guess when they have 50 million people that bought their game, they may as well expand.
I guess
upon
when you're worth like a couple hundred billion dollars, you can just kind of do what you feel like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good stuff.
So I know we're not giant VR guys, but I thought this was at least interesting news. Oculus announced through Facebook, like a Zuckerberg, I think, started it off and then handed it off to Oculus. But announced a new VR thing called the Go, Oculus Go, and it is no phone required, no computer required, like midpoint between the Rift and the Gear VR.
Okay.
But what do you do with it?
Well, they're going to have a bunch of apps. I guess it's going to be compatible with Gear VR apps, and then supposedly there'll be games and stuff made for it as well. They didn't really put a whole lot out about it, but they're going to ship. They haven't like sent out dev kits, I guess, even yet, and those are going out next month. But it's kind of a crazy looking thing. It's very hard to understand how it works or what it's doing, unless it is computer required, and I just didn't pick that up, but it didn't seem like it.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
It's like a middle point VR system to use, you know, for apps and maybe light gaming and stuff. they're supposedly making a big push into like everyday type apps, like video watching, YouTube, all that kind of stuff, like doing in VR. So
it's interesting. Like I'm so torn about this. I listen to the DLC podcast a lot, and Jeff Cannata is like a huge advocate for VR, and they basically talk about it every episode. So I hear about all the new bells and whistles every week, but I'm still really torn. Like, you know, someone raised a pretty good point a few weeks back, and they said VR is sort of in the same place that cell phones were in, like around the year 2000. And they think that eventually it'll get to the point where everybody has a headset and the technology is fantastic. Right now, we're sort of in the flip phone stage. I don't know if I agree with that. I don't know if we're ever going to get to the point where like everybody is sitting around their house with VR headsets on, and it's just something that's commonplace in the average American household. Just because I think at this point, the barrier to entry is still, I mean, the price point's very high, and I think setting it up is a pain in the ass. Like, I've never heard anyone say setting it up was so easy. It's like, well, the sensors and shit, it sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah. Well, and requirements for it are crazy still right now too. So I the pricing thing, I think, is going to change fast. And this is part of the other part of the announcement, is that they also announced they're dropping the Rift prices permanently to $399. And I think what we're going to see is, you know, multi-billion dollar Facebook versus, you know, some billion dollar Valve start price warring over VR and trying to get their set to be the go-to set. So we may see prices drop, I think, now that there's like big names and big money behind it. They can kind of take hits up front without having to sell to make every dollar back, you know.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But even that, I still think the bigger barrier is that AR is coming up very quickly behind it, and that it's a more reasonable situation, I guess, inside of a house or you know, among other people. So I feel like what will happen is we'll see VR is not going to go away, and it'll have some sort of experiences on VR that you can do, and then there'll still be traditional gaming and other such platforms, and then there'll be AR will start coming up much quicker and start kind of hitting. I think once people grasp how people want to use AR and how people are using it and how you can implement it on different devices, that augmented reality is just gonna take off. It's gonna go at a much quicker clip than VR can keep up with. So there's still just some weird argument about telling, you know, my wife or my dad or my brother to like put a VR headset on and do a thing. Like it's still an argument, you know.
Yeah,
I don't even like to wear both ear cups on my head when I'm wearing headphones to play gaming. I like to wear one to the side so that I can like hear what's going on around me. And then when you tell me I need to like go into the sensory deprivation chamber in order to enjoy VR, that like really freaks me out, and I'm like not ready to do that yet.
Yeah. So I don't know. I thought it was interesting mostly that we're starting to see some kind of like price war coming up, and we're starting to see them try to get into this like market where, because Rift didn't really have an in. I mean, they're part of the Gear VR family, I guess. They kind of like co-launch apps and stuff on there, but it's still like it's just not, yeah, I don't know, it's just not, they're not like in that family friendly market, budget friendly area where people will just start buying things as an impulse, you know. So
right
so we'll see. The Google VR is still only like $70 or $80, and they updated that one to run on your phone, and that's like dirt cheap if you just want to like mess around with VR, but it's also powered by your phone, so you're relatively limited in scope. But who knows? Speaking of phones and Google, they had their big kickoff this past week, much like Apple had a few weeks ago. Google announced their new Pixel 2 phones, which are bigger and better and do all the new whiz-bang things that you want a phone to do. The Pixel 2s, there's the XL and the regular one, just like they launched before. I think these are made by LG, if I remember correctly. And supposedly HTC is going to get involved soon if they didn't build one of these. And then the biggest news on them, camera is even better than the one before it, which is honestly hard to imagine. That Pixel camera is probably the best camera on a phone I've ever used in my life. And then the other big news is no more headphone jack. They dropped it.
Interesting.
So now you've got the two biggest phone makers. Well, two of the three biggest phone makers have now dropped headphone jacks. So if Samsung tiptoes into that next, then goodbye analog headphone jacks. They will be going away.
So you have to use your dongle.
You have to, so they have a dongle they pre-pack, and then you can buy one if you lose it or whatever. I never use the dongle on the Apple phone. I honestly bought a $20 pair of Bluetooth headphones that work really great. I have a very expensive pair that broke, and while they were getting fixed, I bought a $20 pair so I could keep listening to things while I go running or go to work or whatever. And I have not actually gotten my expensive ones back yet, and I kind of don't care. The cheap ones work really, really well, and I wish I had just gotten those originally. So it's a pain, you know. You still have to like charge them and whatever, but I don't know. It's hard to say. They did announce Bluetooth headphones of their own. The biggest announcement there is that these things will do real-time translation while you're talking to people. So if you are in another country, you could have headphones in and have the headphones translating people speaking to you into your language. Oh,
that's really cool.
That's cool.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, I saw that news, and I was hoping that the day would come where this would actually happen.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible.
It's crazy. I mean, it's nuts.
Yeah, I mean, they have things now where you could like use Google Translate and take your phone and point it at like a street sign.
Yeah.
And then it would translate it into English for you.
Which is AR.
indeed it is. Yeah.
Snuck into your phone there.
That actually keeps the same font too, by the way, because I've used that before just messing around, and it actually it keeps the same font, just translates the language. It's the most crazy, surreal looking thing ever.
But I just think that's, I mean, like that plus the voice thing would be really exciting for travel, you know?
Yeah.
Going to a foreign country, not embarrassing yourself and being able to like, you know, still be respectful with other cultures, but understand them at the same time, I think would be super cool. So,
yeah, agreed.
That's all like super promising and useful stuff.
They also announced two new versions of their Home, of which I have one and it sits in my living room and works pretty well. Mm-hmm. They announced a Mini, which is to compete with the Echo Dot. If you've seen those, a little $50 one, basically the same deal. It's just Google instead of Amazon. And then they announced a Home Max, which I think, I don't remember the price point offhand. I want to say it was about $300. And this is to compete with the upcoming Apple SoundPod. What did they call it? Apple.
I don't remember.
Speaker, is this like a Sonos speaker, or something?
Speaker pod. It is a big like multi-tweeter, you know, with a sub or something inside of it, speaker that will like adjust based on where you place it in the room. It'll auto kind of EQ itself, and it does all this like whiz bang fancy stuff, and it's a Google Home built into it as well.
Okay. So
you get like all the Google Homeness, but you also get like this high fidelity speaker. And then supposedly if you buy like two of them, you could have, you can set them up in like kind of a stereo. And I think they were even showing them like plugging analog, like a record player into it and using the Google Homes as your speakers. But
that sounds cool.
Don't quote me on that one. And, then they also announced a new Chromebook Pixel, which is their like high-end Chromebook thing, which looked great and is neat, but Chrome OS has come a long way. It's just hard to justify $1,000 on it. I don't know that it's $1,000.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But it is a super nice computer, and it probably would be blazing fast and do a lot of things, but it kind of depends on like how much you already are integrated into doing everything kind of online and in apps. Of course, they also, those laptops now also do Android apps, so the world's kind of opened up a lot with Chrome OS. You can do way more things than you used to be able to, so maybe it has a place, but it was an interesting concept. So if you're already in that world, Google announced a bunch of cool stuff. The Pixel's intriguing to me, but because I wasn't super blown away by the iPhone X, so I don't know which phone I'm going with next, but we'll find out, I guess.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. On a future episode of Rated NA, Matt will announce the phone he purchased.
On the speaker note, I think it's really interesting that the idea of, you know, like it used to be you would get seven speakers in your house, right? And that would be like your home entertainment. And now that's kind of fading by the wayside a little bit in favor of like sound bars or like these like Sonos like connected home systems. And now you know, your personal assistants are just built into the speaker, and I guess can place those speakers throughout the house in some like odd fashion. So I just think that's an interesting shift in technology, because I thought like I was in this mindset where it's like, oh, you just need one good receiver and you can hang on to it for the rest of your life. And that'll like your, you'll just have some like sweet high fidelity sounds. And like now it's all nonsense. And then, you know?
I think what broke that for me was like that your receiver, that tech started outdoing your receiver. Like they would announce new TV tech that would make your receiver not worth it anymore.
Oh yeah, that was
like, it was like, oh, it's 4K, and you're like, oh cool, and then you plug all the stuff in and you're just like, oh, your receiver doesn't support 4K pass through, and you're like, okay, like, neat, I guess. So I have to get a new receiver along with my TV, and you know, they just kind of keep falling apart. But
it already had to be like backwards compatible with like all the prior input forms. You know, so there's like still like the RCA and composite and like the coax and the optical and all this other shit. And it's like you just need like HDMI at this point, and it just makes no sense. You know. Yeah. It's just interesting how things have changed.
Like a receiver really could be like 1 inch tall, but it has to have like 74 inputs on the back of it. And it's the only way you can use it, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever. But I agree.
It's
like
I've glorified stereo receiver at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've gone the way of having just a soundbar in the living room. And then I have like a Google Home and an Alexa. And that's like basically how we listen to music or do anything. So,
yeah, that's ideal. I always wonder, though, like what I would do if I wanted to connect like my old gaming consoles somehow to the TV, and like there would be no way to do that now, you know.
You'd have to buy
a box or something to convert.
You'd have to get some kind of like converter to HDMI.
Yeah. Anyways,
tech woes, guys. So there was like a trailer that dropped this week.
Yeah. So Last Jedi trailer just came out night before last.
Was there really just one day notice for that? I feel like
yeah.
I feel like Star Wars tweeted about it and then it happened.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I mean. It's getting to the point where it pretty much had to. I mean, it was like what we have just until December, so we haven't seen shit for this movie really. So I watched the trailer probably 3 or 4 times, I think, at this point, and then I told myself, no more trailers.
we should definitely say now we will not. Like, in case you're a person didn't want to watch the trailer, we're not going to spoil anything. We'll try not to, at least.
Yeah. Yeah.
Other than that they added animated things.
we can talk about Porgs.
Pogs?
Porgs, yeah.
Porgs and whatever that fucking ice wolf thing is that just trotted across the screen like nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only two moments that I felt it felt a little George Lucas-y, where it was just like, oh, it's a CG thing walking across the screen. Like, oh, wacky.
Yeah, there wasn't. I mean, I guess in the last one there were the big squid creatures and stuff, but there wasn't.
Yeah.
Didn't feel like there's a ton of CG.
That felt weirdly like Marvel-ish to me, less than George Lucas. Like when those squid things were rolling around the ship and stuff, that felt like
Guardians.
It could have been in Guardians or anything else. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. But what was your overall feeling about the trailer? Did you leave like excited or bummed out, or how'd you feel?
I'm going to leave Scott for last because I feel like he'll have the most in-depth feelings.
Okay.
I liked it. It like made me excited. I actually went and bought tickets for Alamo here to watch it and was like, all right, it did not discourage me from the movie. Nothing happened in it where I was like, oh boy, this isn't going to be good. So like, I thought I walked away. I didn't walk away with the same, and this is for probably obvious reasons, but when the first, you know, Star Wars trailer happened, I kind of walked away with like warm and fuzzies and I was super excited. And this one, I just was like, all right, cool, I'm in. And you know, but it's because this is not, it's not new anymore, I guess, which is sad to say, but
right. No,
like
I
Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about you?
I have a feeling this trailer showed us jack shit. Like that's really like when I look, I watched it a few times and I'm like, okay, there's some really, really beautiful vistas. There's some shots of Rey training, which we knew was going to happen. There's some shots of Kylo Ren, you know, without his helmet on, grabbing a lightsaber, which we obviously knew was going to happen. There's a space fight, which we knew was going to happen. So like, I honestly, like after I watched it a few times, I'm like, oh, this is edited very slickly, but I don't really think there's anything in this at all of any significance. There's a couple scenes, and I don't want to get into spoilers, like between Kylo Ren and Leia that people could say, okay, you know, that could be a spoiler, but you knew the two were going to interact, and that's all that it was them interacting. So I don't know. I don't think this trailer really showed anything. You got to see, you know, a couple quick cuts of action sequences and different characters that you hadn't really seen face off against one another briefly. I think it's going to be really exciting because I don't think we've really seen anything yet. So,
I tend to agree with you. And I think I agree with both of you in the sense that I think the trailer doesn't show us anything. And B, I didn't really get excited. I just said, like, yes, this is still good. You know, I'm still on board. And I think the reason for that is that we've been playing the Star Wars trailer game for like a really long time, you know?
Right.
And I think what is pretty, what you can bet on pretty reasonably is that, like, these trailers generally show you things from like the first third of the movie, right? As far as like, you know, being able to guess about like what the sequences, you know, what the plot points are going to be early on in the film.
Right.
And I think we also can get a sense that some of the things you see in these trailers or the dialogue that you hear don't actually appear in the movie. You know, they're almost like things that are like set pieces to get you kind of like on board with what's happening in the film. And what I've noticed, at least with these, this new trilogy in these trailers, what the trailers are doing are they're almost like kind of establishing like motives for the characters in the film. So it's not even like, it's not even a supercut of the film itself. It's just like, here's where Kylo Ren is now. Here's where Rey is. Here's where Finn is. Here's where Phasma is. Here's where Leia is. And so it kind of like mentally gets you kind of like previously on Star Wars. And then watch this trailer and you go, okay, now I know where all these people are in the story.
Yeah. And then
I'm going to go see the film and I'm already kind of like, I'm caught up, you know? And so that's the whole idea, is that like each character in the trailer gets like basically about, you know, 5 to 20 seconds to explain like what their, you know, positions, viewpoints, like motives are for the film. And then that's what you go into the film with. And you're like, okay, I understand what's happening now. I mean, personally, I think, you know, Poe had like a very like motivating line in the trailer, but like you might not actually ever hear that line in the film, right? Because these are the games they play. So and you also didn't see the new character whose name continues to escape me, the new female character. Yes, Rose, thank you. There's no Rose in this trailer, but everyone's obviously stoked to see her. So it's just like you peel back the curtain a little bit more, but ultimately you're still excited. Like if you were excited for this film, you still are. And I think really like the main point of the trailer was to say, hey, tickets are available now, go buy them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is totally valid. So, overall, I'm still excited. And I really, again, I really just hope that we will see something different. I hope that this does not go the way that I think it will.
All right.
to quote a line, making a little jokey joke, Matt. Don't worry.
No, it's good.
Yeah, not grinding gears.
Secrets. Yeah. Yeah. So I went and saw Blade Runner 2049.
Awesome.
On opening night.
Nice.
It was very late. And it is a very long movie to go see when it's very late. But I did it. I troopered through it. So this movie is from the same director who did Arrival, as well as a couple other movies. Arrival I saw recently and thought it was really good. Mm-hmm. And is starring Ryan Gosling. And I'm trying to figure out how much I can say about it without spoiling a whole bunch of things that happen inside of it.
Did you like it?
Yeah, we kick it off this way. It's a absolutely stunningly gorgeous movie. The cinematography and the colors and the shots and like everything that happens inside of it, it's absolutely beautiful from like top to bottom. The movie is incredible as far as like just scenery and shooting and all of that kind of stuff really moves you through the movie. It's very good. The story is good. It's a little heavy at times as far as like following plots. They kind of get you into the same place that I think the original Blade Runner did, where you start questioning a lot of things that are going on throughout the story. And then if you start questioning like the wrong things, stuff can kind of like feel a little thin, but then really the majority of the movie is written well enough that you're kind of just enwrapped in this world But the movie's very good. It's super sad, a lot of it. It's not the most uplifting movie you're ever going to go see. Mm. There's a lot of like kind of 1-2 punches. I have heard, and I have to go, I'm going to go see the movie again, I think, next week. But if you are planning to go, I have heard to watch the lead-up shorts that they did to the movie. So they did one starring, oh shit, what's his real name? The wrestler turned movie star who's in Guardians.
Dave Bautista.
He's not a wrestler. What was he? UFC?
Yeah, he was.
He was a wrestler. Yeah,
he's a wrestler.
They did one about his character in the movie, and I've heard that if you watch, there's another one, another short, live action short. I've heard if you watch those two, it fills in some gaps before you go see it. You don't have to watch it. Like, it's not going to ruin anything. It'll just kind of like open up some story for you. But yeah, I don't, it's hard to get too specific here.
Can I ask some questions?
Speaking, but yeah, like throw some questions at me. I'll answer away.
I'm assuming this takes place like one generation
in 2049.
Yeah, well, one generation after the first film, because Harrison Ford's still in it. Right. Does it? Well, I guess I can't ask that question. I mean, do you feel like this could perhaps be a standalone film, or do you have to kind of like be really versed on the universe of Blade Runner? Like, does it still deal with replicants and like the sort of like the conflict between humanity and like the replicant civilization?
Yes.
So
I would say that if you went in having never seen the original Blade Runner, you would probably not understand 50% of the movie, but you'd probably come out and be like, that was a really pretty movie. you would lose out on a lot of the kind of like moments that happen that are either wowing or poignant, because they do heavily rely on the fact that you understand the world that this movie's in. They don't give a ton of lead up explanation. They don't even really tell you kind of who you're watching or what's going on at the kickoff. Like, you're kind of just like following Ryan Gosling's character from the onset, like out of the blue.
Okay.
So it's not like, and I think even then that they kind of assume there's no, you know, like, as shitty as it was, there's no voiceover coming in telling you everything that's going on currently in the movie. It's just kind of like, which is a throwback to the original cut of Blade Runner, which is terrible, but it just kind of goes. And it's, yeah, I think you would benefit from having seen the original Blade Runner. Now, should you force your best friend or significant other to watch it so you can take them to the movie? I mean, I don't know. If they want to see it, then sure. Mm-hmm. But like 6 hours of movie indulgence is kind of a lot of movie to make somebody watch if they're not super interested in it. Mm-hmm. But I think they would get more out of it if they had seen the original. Does that help?
Yeah, no, that helps a lot. I mean, I think what's interesting is I'm curious why, like, I heard this is like not doing well in the box office, but critically it's doing really, really well.
Right.
Which is kind of, it to me, when that happens, it's very interesting because it just shows marketing means a lot, first of all, and second of all, it word of mouth sometimes doesn't have the power that you think it would, because people are going to this movie and they're really enjoying it, but people still aren't going. Well, what's not? I mean,
you heard the other statistic, though, right?
No, what's the other statistic?
Oh, that this is the lowest attended female attendance
of
an opening weekend on a movie.
Oh,
so like did real great if you're 18 to 35 and male, and then did super terribly if you're anything else.
Interesting, because Gosling is like catnip for women.
Yeah, but I mean, I think you know, the rumblings I heard on Twitter is that this movie gets a lot of like, oh, you've never seen Blade Runner, and then like, you know, 30 minutes of a dude explaining sci-fi to you.
Yes.
So I think it came in historically with a problem, and it has some problems. You know, that movie is not. There are things that happen in the 80s movie Blade Runner that would probably be looked at weirdly today or through a different lens today than it was then.
Right.
And this new one, I don't think, I mean, it sort of suffers from some of this stuff as far as like women aren't the best representation in that movie. There's, you know, it's mainly just a story about Harrison Ford and doesn't really involve any other real human characters at the end of the day. This one doesn't suffer as much from that, but it's still not the greatest representation in the world. And I don't think they fix some of that stuff up to make it appealing. And then the fact that, like we just said, the fact that you have to already have 3 hours of a movie invested in you to even sort of get into this one without right. it just being like a really pretty painting, you know, is a lot. I think it's a lot to ask of the audience. So I'm surprised it's not doing fantastic. It's not doing like miserably. I think it just, it opened lower than they wanted. It opened at like 32 million or something opening okay. weekend, which is, you know, like if the movie only cost 90 million, they'd probably be like, cool, we'll definitely make our money back. But the movie costs like 180 or something
I'm
insane.
I'm sure, so. Yeah. Look, I mean, just from the trailers, it looks pretty big.
Yeah. So to tiptoe around other stuff, questions that you might have in the original Blade Runner, you might still have by the end of this Blade Runner.
Oh, man.
It's a very open-ended movie again. It's not, everything's not answered clean and cut. You know, like, it's just kind of like, it's a really good story about some people. God, this is like a landmine movie, I'm realizing, because it's very hard to not... I can't even say people who are in it or not in it. Like, the whole thing's just kind of like that. So, basically, Scott, did you have any questions? You want anything you
want? No, care? No, I'm following along, and I don't want to make you step on a landmine, so we'll just...
No, I mean, I'll just avoid it if you do. I can... not say anything if you had
I was just going to say my original thought about why it wasn't doing well is just because of, I thought it was because of like all of the knowledge that you may have needed to have ahead of time. You know, it's just, yeah. it's like such an investment to go and understand what's going on in this film that maybe that like scared some people away perhaps.
Sure. I mean, I sort of get it. Like if they put out a Titanic 2 right now, which we'll talk about that, what that could be. But if they put out a Titanic 2 right now, like I constantly get that question when people are like, you never seen Titanic? Like, it's like, and I'm like, no. And at this point, like I probably never will see Titanic. And right. I feel like mostly because of how people respond to me saying I've never seen Titanic, you know, like, and I think that Blade Runner kind of deals with the same thing where it's like, you know, I mean, it is what it is. We are three straight white dudes who grew up on sci-fi and all watched Blade Runner.
When did Blade Runner come out?
89, 88. Yeah.
And I mean, it's like, that's a long time to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then just like, think about how there's going to be four more Avatar films, and the last one was yeah. only like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're going to ask people to remember what happened in the first Avatar film. I have no clue.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. You would have had to have watched this movie recently. So, but right. it yeah. is a really, if you are already a Blade Runner fan, I'm assuming you've either already seen it or you're going to go see it. It is kind of a theater movie. You know, you can watch it on your TV. There's no reason to not wait if you want to wait. But it is a big kind of like giant budget, gorgeous movie. And there's stuff that happens in it that it's just awesome to see on a theater. There's some bigger fights than I think the original one really had, but it's still a pretty personal story. It just gets a little bendy, probably about, which this is crazy to say, at the about the hour 45, it gets a little bendy when you've only got...
Okay.
When you've got another hour left in the movie.
Oh, boy.
So it's not short. It is very, 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 very long. But I've also heard that Denis Villeneuve, right? Said this is the director's cut, quote unquote, that went to the theater. So there
That's
is no
good.
More.
It's good to hear.
This wasn't like him saying like, well, this is what came out. It's more like, no, this is what was intended the whole time. So.
Good stuff.
Anyways, we don't have to keep harkening on about this one. But Blade Runner 2049 is very good. It's very pretty, it's sad, and a nice story. But I would definitely recommend seeing Blade Runner before you go see it, and maybe even watch the two live-action shorts that they did before the movie to kind of get some space filled in when you're actually watching it. Because there are scenes, like Batista's scene, to be fair, is not super long, and he kind of comes out of nowhere, so you don't really know who he is. So I have a feeling his story kind of just gets filled in by this short that they put out ahead of time as a teaser. So...
Good heads cool. up. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to see it.
You should.
So, Ash, you played Life is Strange.
I did. Actually, one of the reasons why I played it was because of your review. And I was like,
thanks,
well,
buddy.
Well, yeah. I mean, honestly, part of the reason I love Life is Strange is because of the performances. And we've had, you know, Hannah on the show and Sissy on the show and Ashley Birch on the show. And yep. I think their work is just fantastic. And then when the SAG-AFTRA strike happened and I learned that none of them were going to be in this spinoff, I was kind of turned off, and I didn't necessarily agree with the decision of, you know, everyone involved to just not hold off and let the voice cast, you know, like wait for the strike to end and then record your shit. And I know that's not how game design works. You never really wait for your voice cast, but I felt like their performance was so integral to the game that it would have been better. But
mm-hmm.
that being said, I was really interested in what this game was about and, ended up sitting down and playing it. And I think I did it in about two sittings late at night. It was roughly yep. about maybe three and a half hours for me for the first episode. It's three episodes mm-hmm. now. And to kind of give you guys a little perspective, if you haven't played Before the Storm, just the short version of what it's about, it's 3 years before the first episode of Life is Strange, and you star as Chloe. So you're about 15 years old in this, so you're a lot younger. Sort of the catastrophic events that occurred in Chloe's life in the first Life is Strange are very fresh, or at least more fresh than they are when she's 18. So she's a little mm-hmm. bit more raw. She's a little bit more damaged. And you get to kind of experience this period of adolescence. And you have no superpowers. You're just kind of this kid in this small town kind of trying to get by. And there's still like weird, I don't want to say there's no supernatural elements because I kind of feel like there are, there's some dream sequences and stuff in Before the Storm that kind of hint that there's something, spooky going on.
Well, it is called Before the Storm.
It is. I mean, it's interesting because even if you beat Life is Strange, there's a lot of questions that are still there at the end. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, what was Max's role in the whole grand scheme of things? Like, was she the reason why the storm was happening in the first place? Like, you know, there's a million questions that I guess we're not going to see until the proper sequel. But so in this, like I said, you're starring as Chloe, and the main, I guess, drive of the story is her relationship with Rachel Amber, who is sort of a tragic figure in the original Life is Strange. And so you get to meet Rachel Amber in this, and like Scott mentioned in his review, last week, Rachel Amber is, she's incredibly well done. And I couldn't be more happy with her performance and how the character ended up turning out. She's mm-hmm. played by a relatively new actress by the name of Kylie Brown, who I think did a absolutely fantastic job as Rachel Amber. You know, it's interesting because like you mentioned in the first game or in the review that you mentioned last time, this, if her portrayal wasn't strong and she came off as like a bit of a jokey character or if the performance, if Kylie's performance wasn't great, it would have detracted so much from the original Life is Strange because
you needed to be grabbed by her immediately, and right. it worked. I think it worked,
and it really did. And so I did some digging just to kind of see what other people were thinking about this, because it's hard. I mean, it's a spinoff done by a different studio. It's done by Deck Nine, who are all just huge fans of the original Life is Strange. And right now, it's got like a 96% overwhelmingly positive reviews on Steam with nearly 6,000 reviews. So it's see that on Steam too much these days. And in terms of gameplay and new mechanics, you briefly mentioned this, but I think one thing it does very well is without the time rewind mechanic, you kind of are living each moment. You're living moment to moment as Chloe, and so your decisions have almost more drastic impact than what happens. I mean, there are some significant things that happen early in the game, and there's a new backtalk mechanic that allows you to, through the use of like sarcasm and snark, kind of manipulate conversations to get what you want.
Yeah,
which I think is a fantastic mechanic, and it's something that it sort of plays you play like a verbal game where you listen to verbal clues that other characters give during conversations, and you react to those verbal clues with your own talk back. So I thought it was really well done. The only thing that I thought was I noticed from a development standpoint was that Deck Nine definitely recycled a lot of environments from the original game. So you see the school again, you see Chloe's house again, but why wouldn't you? You know, because it is the same. It's the same town, right? But I could definitely tell that, like, oh, like, this definitely cut a large chunk of the budget because all these assets were already there. So,
but I feel like you look at parts of those places that you maybe did not look at before. You know?
Yeah, no, I agree, definitely. And you know, honestly, it was really great to go back to, you know, to see Chloe's house again.
Or to go there for the first time.
Right. Yeah, seriously. Good stuff.
Yeah, in the timeline, yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, I ended up having a blast with this. It was moving. I felt like the performances were great. I was not expecting to, I say this all the time in reviews, but I honestly was not expecting to enjoy this as much as I did. But I'm sort of counting the moments so I can see what happens in the next episode. I'm really intrigued.
Without being too specific, did you do the thing that was totally skippable in this game?
I don't know what the thing is, man. You got a hint. You got to give me a hint. What is the thing that was totally skippable?
It's something that you can do with a couple of characters. Outside.
You can tell that. No, I'm going to say it. It's totally fine. You can play a full like 20-minute game of D&D in this game. And it's just fantastic.
It's so well done that I wanted people to kind of like find it first.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but it's really great. There's a couple characters you meet that you can meet outside that are sort of like acquaintances of yours at school. And if you enter in a conversation with them, you can get into a full D&D campaign where you use, you know, some of your verbal abilities and you roll some dice, and it's really incredibly fun, and it actually really made me want to play D&D more.
Yeah, I think the thing that surprised me about that, and since you brought it up, I think the thing that really surprised me about that was that, you know, having played a lot of games in my lifetime, what I expected that to be was like, hey, do you want to play? And then I say yes, and then it's like fade to black, and then we, you know, fade out at the end of it, and she goes like, oh, that was really fun, and then she leaves walks away. But instead, you actually do all of it.
Yeah,
you know,
you do all of it.
You make the you make the decisions. You listen to the DM. You know, other people take turns, and it's like, and then you take a turn, and it influences the outcome. And it's just really, it's really well done. And like I said, I think it's something that you could just say no to, and walk away from, and it would be really.
I did not survive the campaign, unfortunately. So
you did not. Wow,
I did not. I didn't live.
Oh, interesting.
And
okay.
the wizard character got his feet cut off.
Yes, that's awesome.
It was pretty cool. I was really into it. I was like, man, this is just so well done. So yeah, I definitely, you know, even if for some reason you were not a fan of the original Life is Strange, I feel like this is a true prequel, and you could definitely play this. And you know, there's a lot of things for the original Life is Strange that you as a fan of that series like will just kind of be like blown away by, but I don't think you have to have played it in order to enjoy this.
No, I think you're right. I mean, it would probably help a lot because it would give more gravity to things that you know are going to happen, but you could play this game by itself and still really enjoy it. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, there's a scene, and I'm not going to reveal really anything. There's a scene in a pretty significant junkyard in this series that like almost had me on the verge of tears. So very well written, very well acted. I thought it was just fantastic. So definitely check it out. And I'm sure we'll be reviewing the next couple episodes as well.
Sweet. We're two for two.
Yeah. Let's talk about Cuphead, a game which makes me already want to hurt myself. So let's do it.
Go for it, Scott.
Cuphead is the new title from Studio MDHR, I believe is the studio name.
Yeah.
I thought this game was like almost like vaporware for a while, just
is
because
this,
I kept hearing
it. Is this really
about.
Done by two guys? Is that true? That
this team, I mean, saw, it was started by two guys? I don't know if they, like I said, you know.
I've seen photos that look like a, you know, maybe the team at the end when the photos came out looked like the team had like somewhere between 10 and 15 people on it.
Yeah.
So this, I mean, it's not a very large studio. But as you may or may not have heard, Cuphead is sort of like a throwback to, I would say, like old school NES platformers, but then set in an art style which is more like a 1930s cartoon, complete with like hand-drawn environments and film grain and like old-timey music and like a barbershop quartet singing songs in the title sequences. So it's really interesting that they went with that art style in that presentation, because the game while it is difficult, it is not unfair. But for some reason, the way that I feel, and I think the way Matt might feel too, is that the game is difficult, but because you're looking at something that's like a cartoon, I don't feel like that rage building up inside of me when I lose constantly.
Yeah.
And I think it's partially because of that, and partially because the game is, I think the game is fair while also being difficult, but not impossible. You know, and it's like, I feel like when I do fail in the game, I feel like I can point to something and go, oh, I should have done this. You know, I don't feel like the game was cheating me. I just feel like, oh, I could have jumped here. I could have dashed there. And next time I'm going to get it right. And from what I've seen, I've played about 4 or 5 levels of the game, and there appear to be kind of like this mixture between levels that are platforming levels and then levels that are more like just straight up like boss battle. So you don't go through a level and then fight a boss at the end. It's like there are levels that are platforming and then a level that is just the boss, right?
Okay. Yeah. I kind of like that.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. So, and like, again, it's like the bosses are kind of like, you know, like Contra or Mega Man bosses where they do have patterns that you can observe. And if you can learn the patterns and...
Although they're not always perfect patterns. They're like...
No.
They're randomized patterns, if you will. So mm-hmm. like... They will do the same thing depending on what enemy you're fighting, but it will, like, sometimes it'll be 3 times, then they'll do this special thing, and sometimes it'll be 6, and sometimes it'll be 4. Like, so it's never, it's not like once you learn the pattern, you're golden, like, you can get through it. It's still weirdly random while you're playing.
Yeah, I would agree, because in Contra, you could, like, you would find bosses in Contra where you're like, if I stand on this pixel and duck down, I'll never get hit, and I'll just fire continuously and win, right? In this game... You really need to be kind of like alert and on your toes at all times.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of part of the game's challenge is that it forces you to be like really alert to what's happening in the game.
It is like a video game trainer. Like it teaches you how to play the game while you're playing it. And then also it feels like it would make you better at other games from playing it. Like it's a very weird, it's not crazy dexterous. It's just kind of like you have to be paying attention to a lot of stuff and you have to be making sure that you're doing everything at the right time and that you remember that you can shrink or that you can, you know, parry or whatever you might have available to you.
I do think that's part of the hardest part of the game is just remembering what you can do in the game.
Yeah.
Because like, so you can jump, you can duck, you can't double jump, you can dash, you can, parry, like you said. So in the game, there are things, anything that you see that's like a pink color, you can parry. And the way that you parry is that while you're in the middle of a jump, if you tap the jump button again, you'll like parry that object and kind of like get yourself out of danger. So
yeah,
that's just another, like there's a lot of, and there's a like an 8-way directional shooting mechanic as well, but you have to be standing still to use it. Or it's like Contra where you can be running and shoot diagonally up, but you'll still be moving. Right. So
yeah.
The other thing I think is really neat. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say there's also a system for shopping. So you get coins and you can go and buy secondary weapons and secondary specials and you can load those on as you're going. And then you basically switch through them with like the bumpers and the triggers as you're playing.
Yeah, I definitely did. You remap your controls? Because I did that within the first like 10 minutes of
playing. I thought about it and then I got used to it. And then I kind of like it now. Like I'm used to it. So I did.
Yeah.
Because I complained about it to you at first. It's very weird because you're used to shooting with a trigger in general, you know, and this one you were shooting with the X button. But then if you wanted to dash while you were shooting, like, you have to, like, kind of, it's a lot of thumb movement, essentially, to get everything to work.
Yes.
Because everything's mapped to the buttons.
I feel like they did that by default on purpose, like, sort of as an homage to, you know, like, Super Nintendo games where, like, those were the buttons, you know?
Yeah.
Ultimately, I did end up switching all the controls around so that like all I needed to do with my right thumb is like jump and dash, and then all the shooting and switching weapons and all the other stuff is like mapped to other fingers so that I can like do more things simultaneously.
Yeah, because they don't really prevent you from doing. One thing I was noticing, well, a couple of friends were here and they were playing, and I was watching them play. And one thing it's kind of interesting is that they don't really prevent you from doing anything while playing. So if you want to like hold down the fire button the entire time that you're playing, you like absolutely can. It doesn't stop you.
There's no penalty.
There's no penalty. I think the worst thing that would happen is you might not be able to parry while you're firing. You might have to like switch to do that one. But mm-hmm. everything else, you can essentially run, jump, dash while you're shooting, and it doesn't stop you. You don't have a limited amount of parries. You don't like everything's just kind of there for you to use. Your specials you earn, but it's a pretty forgiving earning of the specials. You load up pretty quickly. It's not, a lot of times I forget that I have them, and then I'm like halfway through it. I'm like, oh my god, I know. I have like four specials.
Yeah, for real.
But it's a very like it's weirdly unforgiving in so many levels and absolutely forgiving on others. Like it's unforgiving on the preciseness that you have to play it. And mm-hmm. it's forgiving on like how you control and play the game, I guess, is the way I'd put it.
Yeah, I also think it's unforgiving in the sense where it's like in this kind of era of gaming, you're almost your brain is trained to think like, well, if I take a hit and lose a hit point somewhere else in this level, I'll be able to recover that hit point again.
Yeah,
that's certainly not the case in Cuphead. Like once you like if you have, you know, 3 hit points for a level, those are the 3 hit points that you have. And so you really need to kind of be, again, you just need to be aware of what's happening. You almost need to plan that out, too, when you're fighting the bosses. Like,
yeah,
you know, if you're going to take a hit and what you're going to do to escape it. It's like you almost want to, you know, this because the boss fights go through like different stages. So like in the third stage, you like might be telling yourself like, oh, I need to save my hit points for this and I'll just take one. You know, in order to use a special or something. Like,
did you play the plane one yet? Did you
do that? I've not made it to the plane one yet.
Okay. So there's multiple levels and kind of worlds as well as you're moving through Cuphead.
Mm.
And the first one it's sort of open mapped, which is kind of weird. You can kind of go wherever you want, but,
yeah, I saw that. It's interesting.
Yeah. If you go north first and you get through it, you train and learn how to be a plane essentially, and Cuphead turns into a plane, and then you're flying around and fighting bosses in the air, and it adds this like crazy dimension to the game that is just so much different than the run and gun or the flat boss levels where you're not actually moving around a level at all. Mm-hmm. It's just like there's a weird amount of depth to what is a relatively simple concept of a game, which is like retro style, you know, death kind of first game. And the plane one really enforces that, like, because it's a very long level when you do the first one, if you lose one hit point, like, or two hit points, once you've gone down to two, if you haven't gotten to, like, a certain point in the level, like, just go run into the wall or whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. There's no point. You're not going to make it to the end. It's incredibly difficult. So I just end up restarting, like, or running right into the boss.
That's what I'm hearing everybody's kind of doing is, it's so much about, you know, your Twitch skill, but there's also like there's no like midway save points or like checkpoints. So like if you just get too damaged, it's like you just have to start all over again.
Yep. Yeah.
That was like the one complaint. And there's also no real progression system. So you're never really getting like new stuff as you play to like make you better. It's just always going to be up to you and your skill.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay. Yeah.
You can equip different like weapons, and like you basically get like two weapons and a special item, and then like a kind of like a character item. So one of the first things I took in the game was like a spread fire weapon that was like more like a shotgun length.
How'd you end up liking that?
I used it on the platforming level, so I could just like run through it, you know?
I took the one that's like it goes behind you. Like that like, shoots out and then goes
that's
behind
interesting.
You.
That's interesting.
I actually really liked it.
That's cool. And then I also took, there's something that you can use to augment your dash where you mm-hmm. become invincible while dashing. So you can like dash through enemies or something. So those are the things I took to start, and I really like them. So I think that you could probably approach different levels with different equipment and get different results based on like your skill and the style of play.
Yeah, absolutely. Because like when you start out with your pea shooter, there are levels that are borderline impossible, and then you mm-hmm. load on your special and you're like, or your secondary weapon, and you're like, oh, this changes how I play this level entirely. Like it got so much easier.
And I mean, I fought the there's a like the second or third boss is just like a blob that kind of bounces around the screen.
Yeah.
And I took the pea shooter plus the spread weapon, and then it's just kind of alternated based on like the form that the enemy was in, you know? Like
that
if
was
it was
the first boss I played.
Oh, that was the first one you played?
It was literally the first thing I walked up to and did. Wow, I died brutal. Like 100 times.
Yeah. That's brutal.
None of the levels, though, Ash, I would say, for that complaint, none of the levels are actually very long. Like, if you get through an entire level, I mean, we're talking like
maybe, it's like a 2 minute level.
Yeah, yeah, maybe yeah. like tops yeah. 5 minutes. Like it's like 2 to 5 minutes that you're maybe having to replay. So they're very short, compact little levels that you're doing.
But you need to do them perfectly.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. And then you get graded at the end, of course. And it's like yeah. if you take a single hit, you don't get an A. And then if you yeah. if you take more than one hit, you don't get a B. And then depending on like how fast you did it and other stuff, it goes down from there.
It's kind of like Mario in a sense where it's like the platforming levels have coins to collect.
Yeah.
And then every level has like a parry challenge too. Mm-hmm. So it's like parrying isn't really essential to the game, but like there might be like 6 things that you need to parry in a level. And so you're like trying to collect the coins and do these like skill, you know, trick parries throughout the levels. And then you're trying to get like the best rank by completing the yeah. level, or you could just play to complete the levels and just, you know, move so through it.
I also did a little bit of couch co-op.
Yes. We didn't talk about that. It's too bad that it's only couch co-op. But
yeah, it is only couch co-op.
There's does no that make it co-op. Harder or does it make it easier?
Oh my God. They ramp the level of difficulty up. Like,
do they really?
Times 3, like not times 2. Like it's like, oh, yo, wow. yeah, every boss lasted longer. Like every fight, like the run and gun level wasn't, I think it was about the same that we played, but the mm-hmm. boss levels were all like, they were like off the charts hard. It was way, way harder.
We should mention that the bosses don't have health bars. You just kind of like fight them through their forms. And then if you die, you get this little animation that shows you like how far you got in the level, yeah. even for a boss. So you at least would know when you died, like, oh, I was like 80% of the way through this yeah. boss. But you don't know that when you're fighting him.
It really, like, I understand your, what do I want to call them? Your apprehension, Ash. But, like, I'm not huge on these games either. And there's just something about the aesthetic and the polish to this game that makes it, like, playable. Like, it's just, it's not as frustrating as what was the one I played? The
like Mega Man?
Well, Jesus Christ. I mean, it's nowhere near as frustrating as it used to be when we were gaming like on mm-hmm. Mega Man or Mario or Metroid or whatever, whichever one
is,
you want to pull up.
It is like that, but it's not as frustrating.
It's similar to that in the nature that it's like, oh, you know, you have to understand, you have to like remember how to play and like, you know, come in and out of it. But it's they're shorter levels, I think, make a big deal because they're definitely shorter than some of those Mega Man levels. And then there's like, I don't know, there's just a charm to the game that is, it's like relaxing. It's while you're like white knuckling through a level, you're sort of, you're like leaned back in the couch and not like hunched up on it. You know, like, I don't know. It's there. I'm just really enjoying it. It really caught me. I played it at like either PAX or Comic-Con or something like years ago. And thought it was great. I got like a little snippet. I want to say it was Comic-Con actually. I think it was in the Xbox booth. They had it like out. And I played like 30 seconds of it. I was like, I don't know what this game is, but it's gorgeous. And I really liked it. And now playing it more, I'm just really enjoying it. Yeah. I really didn't know if I would, cause I knew the nature of this like ultra hard platformer isn't necessarily what I always like playing. Have you mm-hmm. tried simple at all, Scott? Or have you only done
regular? No, I haven't tried simple. I've just done the normal. I mean, I've been doing okay. I'm stuck on a boss right now, but otherwise I feel like I'm at least competent in the
if
game.
If you're stuck, so. I would say go back up and explore the other parts of the map because it's not any harder or easier. They're just different.
Just different, bosses. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
I was going to say, I feel like skill-wise, like if you can like hold your own in like a Mega Man 2 level, and I'm not saying beat the game, but I'm saying like if you can kind of like fumble your way through a Mega Man 2 level, you can play Cuphead. Like if you can get through yeah. like Flashman with those like, with those beams that cross the level at that, in the midpoint of the Flashman level, then you can handle what's going on in Cuphead, and you get more options too, like when you unlock more stuff. So,
yeah, for sure,
it's doable.
We haven't tried simple yet, and I don't know what simple means, but there's an easier way to play it as well that you can switch to. And I, for one, think, you know, go for it. Who cares? Like, no one's looking. Just do play it. Whatever's fun, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm glad you guys like it. I mean, it is visually stunning. I just I listen to a lot of gaming podcasts, and it's sort of been a mixed situation. Like, people all think it looks and sounds beautiful, but they also say, like, man, I just want to throw my controller. There's all these videos of, like, pro streamers, like, breaking their computers and like just being idiots, you know, because it's so hard.
I think that's ridiculous. I think that that's overblown, and maybe it's because we played the old games.
Well, all games were fucking hard back then. Like the SNES Classic, they're all impossible. I got through like 20 minutes of Super Ghouls and Ghosts and wanted to like gouge my eyeballs out.
Yeah,
it's,
like that,
it's insanely hard.
That is an unfairly hard game. You know, like Cuphead is a hard game that is fair. You know,
right?
Like you can learn how to be good at this game, but I feel like even if you were good at Super Ghouls and Ghosts, like that game would still cheat you out of victory. You know what I mean? Like that's
it's just
the nature of the beast, right? So
right.
I also think like, you know, I get frustrated playing all these other fucking games where it's like some asshole shooting me from 10 miles away with a gun that I can't even see.
Yep.
So it's like, good. I'm glad people are frustrated with this game. I don't know. Like that makes me happy because I'm enjoying it. And it's like, it's actually an experience I like. So for me to like hear that gamers that are like probably play all the games that I fucking hate are like frustrated with this one brings me joy to some level. So so there you go.
It's very true. Maybe platforming is just a lost art, you know?
Yeah. They did actually say, so like real quick, they grew to 7 members total.
Wow. Still
it was
tiny.
two guys that worked on the majority of it, and then they hired a programmer, an artist, and a jazz musician.
And now they're two super fucking rich guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, who knows? Yeah, I mean,
well, I mean
they started 7 years ago, so you have to account for that for some of it.
That's true.
But
they're still probably
I assume they've sold a lot. Yeah, I assume they've sold a lot. Plus, they were
Microsoft
Xbox
gave them
some some money down there.
So it's recommended. I recommend it.
I actually think it's really enjoyable and fun. It's a game you can pick up and play for 10 minutes and then put down and come back to an hour later or 12 hours later. It doesn't matter. It's a game that I think you can play at your own pace. And if you're frustrated with it, just go play a different level or switch it to simple and try to beat it that way. Like, I don't know. To me, there's it's playable. It's like super, super playable and fun. And it's absolutely gorgeous. So
agreed. And it's also Xbox Play Anywhere. So if you buy it on either platform, you'll have it on your Windows PC. And I'm actually playing it on my Surface right now. And it runs great.
Yeah, awesome.
So there you go.
Cool. Let's talk about some
superhero TV.
Let's do it.
Yes.
Have either of you seen The Gifted or Inhumans?
I have not.
I've seen large portions of Inhumans, but I haven't watched the pilot.
Okay. So I'll talk about The Gifted first, because I am happy to say that The Gifted is actually really good.
That is shocking information.
It is.
Absolutely shocking.
Dude, I am so shocked. I kind of watched it just because of Amy Acker and that I'm an Amy Acker fan.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone's listened to the show before, I've never had one positive thing about to say about Bryan Singer or the X-Men films. I just don't love them. And it pains me because I grew up with the X-Men being like my extended family as a kid. So to have these characters kind of be the way that they are now in the films, it kind of bums me out. But I will say that The Gifted is the most X-Men thing that I've probably seen since the X-Men animated series on the screen.
So interesting.
It is really interesting, because what it does is it takes the story of the X-Men and it kind of twists it a bit. The X-Men and the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants are gone. No one knows where they are. They've kind of vanished in some sort of incident type event. And in the aftermath of this event, you have a government that's hunting down mutants, not violently and not like murdering them, but making them register and putting some of them in internment camps and things like that. So they're not just flat out murdering them, but they're kind of tagging them all. And then you have groups of mutants that are on the run because they want to, you know, stay out of the eyes of the government because they have an idea of what's going to happen if they do get tagged. And so you do have famous mutants from the comics, characters like John Proudstar, who's the second Thunderbird character, and Blink and Polaris and Sage and a handful of other mutants that are sort of secondary characters in the X books are main characters in this. But it also revolves around Amy Acker and her family, who are two teenagers that are probably about 14, 15, maybe 16 years old, that are just discovering their powers and kind of get thrust into the situation with the mutant hunters and the mutants, and then there's this sort of normal family that's caught in the middle of it. I will say that it does powers, like the mutant powers, better than any of the ABC Marvel shows. There's a scene that I thought was just fantastic where Blink is, and I'm not going to really spoil too much, but Blink is kind of like losing control of her powers a bit. And she's opening portals all over the place, and a portal opens like in a distant place, and a chunk of a truck gets like chopped in half by her portal. And the chunk of the truck like flies into this room, like the interior of a room, like the back end of a pickup truck. And Proudstar, who has like superhuman strength and like a little bit of invulnerability and super senses, like stands there and like takes the hit from the back of this truck. And the truck just like goes flying through the air, and like debris goes everywhere. And it's like, like it was like straight up like real movie quality action, good stuff with mutant powers. And they don't shy away from letting the characters use their abilities. Like they probably just in the pilot, I watched the first two episodes of this. In the first two episodes, like every 4 or 5 minutes, they're using their powers, which is something that like always, like with the ABC shows, just it bums me out. It's like they're almost afraid to like quake all the time, or let you know, Yo-Yo like run around fast for 10 minutes. It's like, give us give us more than 5 minutes of this. It can't be, if people are doing it in like, you know, on YouTube constantly, like, you know what I mean, like let them use their fucking abilities. In terms of performance and cast and everything, the main parents are Stephen Moyer, who was on True Blood. He played Sookie's like vampire boyfriend. Anyone watch True Blood here? Or am I like the only one that watched five seasons?
I've only seen the first season.
Yeah, I'm the only one. I watched five seasons of that show. Just season one. Yeah, so
you did watch season one, Scott?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Vampire porn.
I liked it. I just never, I couldn't keep up with it.
Yeah. But anyway, he's the main vampire in that, is the dad in this. And then of course, Amy Acker, there is a mutant that I think was created just for the show by the name of Eclipse. Who's the actor's name is Sean Teal, and he's about, I feel like when they were making this character for the show, they're like, we need Poe Dameron. they're like, all right, find a dude who looks, acts, and sounds exactly like Poe Dameron. And so basically Poe Dameron's in the show, but he has powers. And he's good. The kids are great. Right. They're believable. Shockingly, like, Bryan Singer directed the pilot, and I really liked the pilot, and like, I don't like Bryan Singer's stuff.
You're going to become a real singer head.
Oh, dude, is that a thing? I don't think that's a thing.
Let's not make that a thing.
Yeah. I did like Usual Suspects. I thought that was a fantastic film, but anyway,
everybody loves Usual Suspects.
So anyway, pilot was really good, and I'm really intrigued to see where it's going. Like, I feel like the pacing's great. The action's really good. I'm interested for you guys to watch it and let me know what you think. Jamie Chung, I like her and everything. She plays Blink. She's great.
Cool. Yeah, I'll give it a shot. It just was like same apprehensions. And then the show gave off a really like, I don't know, like Buffy meets Riverdale vibe or something. It felt like a CW show when I was looking at it. And then I just don't know. It just wasn't, it didn't look like it was something I would,
you know,
really
what
love,
it ended up, honestly, so. In terms of tone, I think like of like any of the shit, it's more of like a 24 than anything else. Like the first episode is basically like this family on the run for the entire episode, and it's just like go 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 go. So it's they don't do a lot of setup. It's just kind of like you're thrust into this really,
or you know what it gave situation. Me the vibe up. I got the perfect example. This is what I got. It's Teen Wolf on MTV, because I've watched a bunch of that. Melissa,
I actually have not seen that.
And I was like, this feels like it's going to be that, but what you're describing doesn't sound like that. So I'll give it a shot. I'm definitely,
it's good, man. And I'm interested in what you think of like the CG and all the powers and everything. I think they did a really good job of like, of just letting mutants be mutants, and
yeah,
it's good stuff. The other thing I watched the first two episodes of was Inhumans, and,
you watched two episodes of it?
I watched two episodes.
Wow.
Well, yeah, I wanted to see, you know, what was going to happen. You know, and one of the things we kind of pride ourselves on this show is not being overtly negative about things, or, you know, we try not to review things that we don't like, but this show is the worst abomination that I have ever, like, it is so boring. So boring. I've watched episodes of Ghost Whisperer that are like insanely better than this show. I don't know what happened. Like, I mean, I kind of have an idea of what happened, but, you know, at this point, everyone's pretty much read a million negative reviews of Inhumans. Yeah. So I don't have to get into it, but it's almost the opposite of The Gifted, where they're kind of showcasing these characters and their powers, and they're, you know, they're proud to show off the characters and their powers and kind of embrace the legacy of the characters from the comics. And I feel like the Inhumans does, everything in its power to like take the powers away from everybody that has powers and distance it as far as humanly possible from the actual property, which is, you know, a bunch of Inhumans.
Isn't it sort of weird
living in Atalan, which is on the moon, you know?
Isn't it sort of weird that ABC so like Marvel movies are great because Marvel superheroes always have like powers and they do stuff and it's fun and, you know, whatever. ABC, which is part of Marvel, they always like strip the powers off of whoever it is. Like, it's always like immediately like, she can quake the earth, but only so much before she really does some damage to herself, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then and the opposite side of that is in Fox World, Singer generally in all of his movies immediately strips the powers out of every X-Men that exists. And it's like, well, what if he was just a guy running around? And you're like, well, I don't want to watch a guy running around. I want to watch like superhero people.
Right.
So it's interesting to see that they flipped that with The Gifted and did like immediately have powers. And they're trying to deal with this notion of having powers and all that, kind of, which is really what the X-Men is kind of about. Yeah, at the end of the day. I think, funny enough, I think the audio from Comic-Con of me talking about Inhumans is lost to the wind, I believe. But I got the same exact feeling, if you remember, when we talked about it months and months ago from seeing just, you know, whatever 30 minutes of footage that I saw. There was one really good moment with Karnak and his powers in the first episode, or at least okay moment, I thought, where they showed kind of how Karnak logics things out, I guess.
Right.
But then beyond that, it was like every single character, you're like, what are they doing to this character? And it's just so weird to watch that happen.
I'm going to spoil it for just a second, okay? Because nobody gives a shit. But
are you going to say Medusa's thing?
Well, yeah. So, okay. So Black Bolt can't use his powers because he'll blow up the world. He kind of uses them for a minute and they don't really do anything. He uses, like, he's supposed to be able to just, like, blow up a planet if he uses his powers, but he, like, pushes a police car 10 feet, which is just
that's
super
like their
shitty.
Favorite thing to do on ABC shows.
Yeah,
push a car.
Push a car.
Like, okay.
Yeah, Maximus doesn't have any powers now.
Yeah, crazy.
Medusa gets her head shaved to save CG budget. Triton dies in the first episode.
Yeah, dies immediately.
And so they don't have to do prosthetic makeup. Karnak gets a blow to the head, so he can't use his powers. His powers are fucked up. Lockjaw gets knocked out, so he's out of he's like captured and out of the show. And I think that's pretty much everybody. So in the first two episodes.
What about Gorgon, right? Is that.
Oh, Gorgon. They put Gorgon in the water so he can't use his powers because they make a guy who does like foot earthquakes swim. Or something like that. So
they also put him in boots too, didn't they?
That's
he was like running around in boots for a little while, and I was like, what is happening in this show?
I honestly don't know. It was just a huge misstep, and I don't know, you know.
I have a theory. You want my theory?
Please, yeah, tell me.
My theory is that they thought about making, they scheduled it as a movie, right? They were like, we're going to do this movie, we're going to make Inhumans, we'll figure out how to make it work. Because to be fair to anyone that would have taken on this property, it is a weird property, and it's hard to write. I think you could do it as a sort of high-powered like soap opera, if you wanted to, or something along those lines. But it's not the most straightforward property in the world. But they had this property, they were going to make a movie, they're going to figure it out, they're like, we'll slate it for 2019, so we don't even have to think about this thing. We just let other people write it. Like, we'll do 19,000 drafts before we hit that point. We'll have this whole thing worked out. And then Sony screwed up every single property they ever bought from Marvel, and then was like, please save us, let's do a Spider-Man movie. And they were like, what? And they're like, we can do Spider-Man? And then they're like, oh man, we got to bump some stuff. All right, we'll move Spider-Man in. Ooh, we'll pick up Captain Marvel. Let's push all this other stuff out. Axe Inhumans, we were never going to pull that off anyways, but they had some like weird contract going with it, so then they're like, you know what, we'll just do a short run on ABC and we'll see if it happens to go well, then like yay for us, and if not, who gives a shit, we'll move on. And then they basically kneecapped it on ABC and just gave them like no budget, and gave them the show and said, all right, here's no budget, here's the show, see what you can do. And then just like nothing happened.
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. And from the rumblings I've heard, Scott Buck, who's the showrunner on this, he's called in as sort of a mercenary to bring stuff in under budget and for as little money as possible. So he can make shit happen, but he literally makes shit happen.
He famously did Iron Fist as well.
Yeah. Which I liked more than you guys, but
that show, Ash, I don't know how. It's so bad.
It's like Kung Fu, the series from the 80s, you know? that's kind of how the enjoyment I got out of it.
Boy.
Wow. Okay.
I think that's it. I think we did.
Yeah, for real. I haven't heard such a fierce freestyle takedown of something since yesterday.
Oh, boy.
So,
politics.
So you don't like the Inhumans. I get it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I wish I did. I really do.
No, it's okay.
I want to like happens. All this stuff, but, you know, what can you
Can't do? Like it all. What are you going
to
do?
That's true. I hope to see you guys soon. I know, Scott, you got some stuff going on that we'll announce at some later date. And
we'll talk about it in the future.
Yeah, and I might be at TwitchCon when you guys record next, but I'll be out in Long Beach for 3 or 4 days for work. So if you're at TwitchCon, say hi. I would love to see
you. Yeah, man, have fun. Have fun. That sounds awesome.
I'll be...
Yeah, go get brunch at the place that Guy Fieri told me to get brunch at. It was good.
I don't know. I think they have me like literally duct taped to a chair streaming for 3 days straight. So I don't know what's gonna be happening to me. But you guys can find me on the internet. I'll be streaming some video games. So yeah, you guys can follow us on Twitter. It's at NerdAppropriate. We have Facebook, which is /NerdAppropriate. Email us directly. We'll just do nerds@nerdappropriate.com.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? And we have, of course, Twitch TV and Mixer. And we are rated NA on Mixer, and we are /NerdAppropriate on Twitch TV, which we'll use these one of these days. I got some cool new stuff I want to stream.
Ooh, and, cool.
And other than that, we'll be back in probably, I would say, a week or two with a new show. We'll try and do something. We'll figure something out, but we'll back.
Figure it out.
Yep. We're still here.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Go to Spice World 2017.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Awesome.
I was really hoping it was going to be a Spice Girls conference.
Oh, I know. One can only wish, right?
Oh my gosh.
That's what
I really, really want.
That's what you really, really want.
Yeah, absolutely.